Good morning. Wait for Michael to put the PowerPoint up. He was distracted. We planned that. We planned it. Yeah, so today, spent a little bit of time talking about distractions and the potential harm that distractions can lead to. And so for today, we're going to have a kind of working definition of distracted. And what we're talking about is being distracted is shifting your focus from something of greater importance to something of lesser importance. And to kind of start off, I'm going to ask for some grace here. If you feel like I'm pointing the finger at somebody, just know that, you know, when you point your finger, you have three pointing back at you. Sometimes I shoot the double guns, which means we got six pointed back at me. So, we're going to start out by talking about some good old cell phone statistics. Did you know that the average person checks their cell phone 47 times a day? That's 17,155 times a year. That 85% of all smartphone users check their phone while in a conversation with somebody. And I said this before too, but if you spent 2 hours a day on your phone, which on average we spend more, then at the course of 1 year, you would have spent one entire month on your phone. It's said that also about 85% of American adults have a smartphone. So it's not, I don't think it's a stretch to say that we're entirely too distracted by our phones. And phone dependency can have a very negative effect on our lives. So being too dependent on your phone will increase your anxiety. Some of that's because the anxiety builds because your productivity decreases. It can lead to more stress. It's said that the average American workday has increased because we're never off the clock now. We always have access to our emails and text message and everything else. So we're no longer working that 9-to-5, 40-hour work week. We're working 24/7 all the time because we always have this thing attached to us to keep us working. Too much social media can lead to narcissism, that we get too focused on what people think of us and our own self-image of ourselves. Teens today are statistically more depressed and lonely than ever before, even though we are so much more connected now, that we are sacrificing real life connection to the artificial connectivity of social media and everything else. Too much usage can lead to attention deficit disorder. We become a nation of skimmers. We no longer read full articles, books. We like headlines. We like things quick. Everything needs to be summed up in a quick 140-character message. Otherwise, it's too much. We're not interested. And sleep deprivation, always having that phone right next to us, is causing us to sleep less, which can lead to long-term effects in mental health, memory loss, learning skills. And I just want to point out that if you're starting to feel a little defensive about your own usage or anything else, take note of that, because you're defending it, just like, you know, an abused spouse might defend the spouse that's abusing them, or an addict defending why they're using any kind of substance. Take note of if you're feeling defensive about how you use your phone. That's like first step of recovery, I think, right there. And again, I am just as guilty. I am someone that checks my phone while talking to my wife. I am somebody that will check my phone 47 times a day. So it's not me saying that I'm learn from me. It's the exact opposite. I am 100% there. So even though these devices can bring a lot of good, there's a lot of harm in them. But that's not the total. Like, that's just a huge distractor that we have. I don't think anyone's going to be surprised that our cell phones are a huge distraction in our lives. But, you know, like, there's so many other things that can get us distracted. Everyone has their own distractions. Jennifer is going to love this story here. On Monday, I threw my back out. It's because I'm that's an old person thing, you know, like, because I'm always... But I hurt my back probably on average about twice a year. I've been twice a year for like the last 10 years. So I hurt my back. I go to the chiropractor. I get adjusted. Eventually my back gets better. The chiropractor tells me you need to, you know, make it much more regular coming, but at least get monthly adjustments and start working on your core strength. You know? And when my back is hurting, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to start going monthly. I'm going to start doing all these things to prepare myself better so this won't happen. Because it when your back goes out, I don't know how many people have back problems, but when your back goes out, you can't do anything. I am so dependent on my wife when my back goes out that it's embarrassing. But the moment my back starts to feel better, I forget of all these promises I made myself. I get distracted by my back feeling normal. So it's weird because you're like, okay, well, you know, feeling good is a good thing, but that also can be a distraction to self-care and being proactive rather than reactive on my own personal health. You know, I bring this up just because we don't often see what's distracting us. I want to go to Luke 10, where we meet two sisters, Martha and Mary. It's very short. I wouldn't even go see your turning. I wouldn't. If you want to go to some place, go to Nehemiah 6. We'll spend a lot more time in Nehemiah 6. We're just real brief here. I have Luke 10 up here. But as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "Are you worried and upset? You are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her." So in this, Martha is very distracted by being a good host, by doing what was expected to her on our standards. And what Jesus said was, you're being distracted by something of lesser importance. Like here you have Jesus doing like a home Bible study, and you're like, I'm in the kitchen. Like who would give up the chance that if Jesus was teaching in your home to not sit there and learn from him? But Martha was too concerned about what might be thought of her if she wasn't being a good host. And then she got really concerned because her sister wasn't helping her. She had all these distractions going on, even though in her heart it was good. It's good to be a good host, but she was missing the greater point. Now, yeah, if we turn to Nehemiah 6, I think I've mentioned this before as well, that Nehemiah is one of, if not my favorite book of the Bible. And a lot of people will talk about Nehemiah as one of the great leadership books in the Bible. But I think I'm drawn to it because it's really one of the greatest examples of stewardship I think you can find as well. We're going to be going into Nehemiah 6, but Nehemiah is more of a story. And so just to get people caught up, I'm not going to do the first five chapters any justice. I love the book. If you're not familiar with it, if it's been a while, I recommend digging in there. It's a good read. But let's get to know what happened up to Nehemiah 6. And we start by meeting Nehemiah, who is a slave in a distant land, in the land of Susa. And then his brother one day comes to him and gives him news about Jerusalem and says that the wall has been destroyed in Jerusalem and the people have been taken advantage of. This was not new news because the wall had been destroyed for 140 years, longer than Nehemiah has been alive. So it wasn't new news, but the news hit him in a new way. And it just completely broke his heart. And at that moment, through prayer, God gave Nehemiah the mission to rebuild the wall. Now, he had a very prominent position with the king. He was the cupbearer. And the cupbearer had to be someone that the king really, really trusted. So basically, he would be the one that would taste the wine, and from that tasting would take the wine to the king. So he was kind of the last line of defense. So you had to really be in good with the king to have this position. So the king wouldn't just let this person go easily. So he came to the king and asked, and put forth this plan. He asked for 12 years off. He asked for the king to finance the rebuilding of the wall. And he also asked for an armed escort for him to make it to Jerusalem, which is ridiculous because the king had no interest in Jerusalem, did not follow the same God as Nehemiah. There's no reason for the king to not only give a trusted servant all this time off, but then to finance the whole project. But by God's grace, the king agreed to do all that. So he sent Nehemiah to Jerusalem. And then once in Jerusalem, Nehemiah had to convince basically the entire town to help in this rebuilding project. He ran into basically the neighboring towns did not want to see Jerusalem rebuilt because they were the ones taking advantage of the people of Jerusalem. They were the ones exploiting them. So we meet Sanballat, Geshem, and Tobiah, and they just become the rock in Nehemiah's shoe, the thorn in his side. And while the efforts are to rebuild the wall, there are times where people had to build the wall with one hand, with a sword in the other, because they're being like physically attacked, they're being ridiculed this whole time, and it's just been a big cause of strain and distraction to Nehemiah. We come to Nehemiah 6 when the wall is almost completed. So it says that when word came to Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem the Arab, and the rest of our enemies, that I had rebuilt the wall and not a gap was left in it, though up to that time I had not set the doors and the gates. Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message, "Come, let us meet together in one of the villages on the plain of Ono." But they were scheming to harm me. So I sent messengers back to them with this reply, "I am carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave and go down to you?" Four times they sent me the same message. Each time I gave the same answer. And I think that, one, we can learn that when distractors come, they're typically very persistent. These distractions came to Nehemiah four times. But look at how he answered that. He said, "I'm carrying on a great project and cannot come down." He said that this is of greater importance and not going to be distracted by lesser work. Then the fifth time, Sanballat sent his aid to me with the same message, and in his hand was an unsealed letter. And an unsealed letter was very dangerous at the time. That was kind of like, he put it on like a public forum. Anybody could see this message. Before, all the messages would have been sealed, and you would have known if somebody tampered with it. But in this situation, it was completely open, and it was going to be led to gossip. In the letter was written, "It is reported among the nations that, and Geshem says it is true, that you and the Jews are plotting to revolt, and therefore you are building the wall. Moreover, according to these reports, you are about to become their king, and even appointed prophets to make this proclamation about you in Jerusalem. There is a king in Judah." And so that would have been treason. Had the king heard that, that could have come back, and then that would have been like the end of Nehemiah's life. That, you know, you do not revolt against the king. So he sent a reply. He said, "Nothing like what you are saying is happening. You are just making it up out of your head. They are all trying to frighten us, thinking their hands will get too weak for the work, and they will not be completed. But I prayed, now strengthen my hands." So, again, he's now being threatened that what he is doing is treason. But he doesn't allow that to get to him. He doesn't say, you know, what these people are doing are going to affect my work. He says that my God is greater. God's work is more important. So he says that nothing, you know, he doesn't argue with them. He doesn't give them any more attention than what they deserve. He just said that what you're saying is not happening, and goes about his work again. So they try again. "One day, I went to the house of Shemaiah, son of Deliah, son of Metabel, who was shut in his home. He said, 'Let us meet in the house of God, inside the temple. Let us close the temple doors, because men are coming to kill you by night. And they are coming to kill you. But I said, should a man like me run away? Or should someone like me go into the temple to save his life? I will not go. I realized that God had not sent them, but he had prophesied against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. He had been hired to intimidate me so that I would commit a sin by doing this, and that they would give me bad name and discredit me. So now so if we can't get him to go and actually harm them, let's go ahead and trick him so that the people of Jerusalem are now going to go ahead and revolt against him, and he will lose his people. But again, he knew what his work was. He knew what he was doing. And his answer was, should a man like me, should a man commissioned by God to complete this work, stop this work because you're threatening me again? Should a man like me run away? And he was focused on the mission, so all the outside noise would not affect him. So now here's the amazing part. Nehemiah was praying. He says, remember Tobiah and Sanballat, my God, because of what they did. Remember the prophet Noadiah and how she sent the rest of the prophets. She and the rest of the prophets have been trying to intimidate me. So the wall was completed on the 25th of Yule in 52 days. So this project that had been gone undone for 140 years, that many people tried to complete, many people failed. They got it done in less than 2 months. And how did Nehemiah do it? Did he do it because he was a great leader? I don't think so. I think he did it because he knew who he was working for. He knew the cost of failure. He knew that he wasn't just building the wall. He wasn't just fortifying a city. He was fortifying a place for God, for God's people to worship. At the end result, it wasn't just a wall, it was salvation. It wasn't just Nehemiah, but it was countless other people. Keep in mind, he built that wall in under 2 months. That's 4 hours a day on your smartphone for 1 year. Now I want to bring up another guy who his distractions are legendary, but so is his love for God. It's the man after God's own heart, right? We all know of David's distractions, but I just want to read a couple of Psalms and just look at his focus. Psalm 27 says, "The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When these wicked advance against me to devour me, it is my enemies and my foes who will stumble and fall. Though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then I will be confident. The one thing I ask from the Lord, this only do I seek, that I might dwell in the house of the Lord all my days of all my life. To gaze on the beauty of the Lord and seek him in his temple. The one thing I ask from the Lord, this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and seek him in his temple." Above safety and security and comfort, the one thing that David wanted to do was dwell in the house of the Lord. His eyes are pointed up. His eyes are focused on the Lord. And it's really hard to keep our eyes up focused on the Lord, again, when we're always looking down at our phones. Psalm 63 reads almost like a love note. "You, God, are my God. Earnestly I seek you. I thirst for you. My whole being belongs to you. In a dry and parched land where there is no water, I have seen you in the sanctuary and beheld your power and your glory. Because your love is better than life, my lips will glorify you. I will praise you as long as I live, and in your name I will lift up my hands. I will be fully satisfied with the richest of foods. With singing lips my mouth will praise you. On my bed I remember you. I think of you through the watches of the night. Because you are my help, I sing in the shadow of your wings. I cling to you. Your right hand upholds me. Those who want to kill me will be destroyed. They will go down to the depths of the earth. they will be given over to the sword and become food for the jackals. But the king will rejoice in God. All who swear by God will glory in him, while the mouths of liars will be silenced." I tell you what, if we were to write our wives a letter like that about them, there would be no problems. It's a beautiful letter towards God. But that's not to say that, you know, again, David and Nehemiah didn't get distractions. Distractions come. But when we find ourselves distracted, we have to take note, because those distractions are a key to our heart. So to fight distractions, we have to understand and be aware of our distractions. Distractions frequently tell us what we love, trust, and fear. We gravitate towards desires we crave and away from fears we wish to avoid. So listen to what your familiar distractions are saying. How are you seeking joy, and what are you trying to escape? And we need to treat self-control as a muscle. Muscles do not grow stronger without resistance, and self-control is the same way. We have to resist what we are tempted to do when they are distracting us. And just like a muscle, when we stop exercising that muscle, we become weaker. We also need to learn the spiritual discipline of saying no. See, if Martha went to Mary and said, "Mary, I need you to come help me," Mary would have been like, "No." She went to Jesus and said, "Jesus, Mary isn't helping me." Jesus said, "No." Nehemiah told Sanballat and the crew no so many times. And David told, in the Psalms, he told his fears no. He told his lack of confidence no. He knew that his God was greater than anything his enemies could do. So he said no. We need to learn to say no. When there's something, when someone is asking something of us that we just don't have the time to do, we need to learn it's okay to say no. It's not being unloving or rude. We can say no if it's getting in the way of what's important to us. Remember, distraction is putting something of greater importance beneath something of lesser importance. And we have to expect to fight distraction daily. There's a saying that if the devil can't make you sin, he'll make you... Anybody else know it? Devil can't make you sin, he'll make you busy. So even if you're fighting the good fight, you know, he's going to continue to keep you busy. So that's my short message here today. I hope it helps. I hope we can take this and help fight distraction, keep God first. If you would, go ahead and pray with me, please. Lord, whatever it takes, please free us from our distractions so we can be better servants to you, Lord. We thank you for all your sacrifices. Amen.